Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The US President-elect Donald Trump urged the Russian President Vladimir Putin not to escalate the war in Ukraine and reminded him of America's sizable military presence in Europe. Those comments were made during a phone call on Thursday. That was according to a report in the Washington Post yesterday. But in the last hour, the AFP news agency have reported that the Kremlin denied that this call between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump had ever taken place. Well, to talk more about this, I'm joined in the studio by former British ambassador to North Korea and Belarus, John Everard. John, you're very welcome. And it's a great pleasure to have you here in Dublin. Normally, we will speak to you over the phone. But this is intriguing, isn't it? The Russians coming out this morning saying, no, phone call didn't happen.
Yes, this is quite bizarre. I mean, clearly, one side or the other has either got this badly wrong or is simply lying. Now, you have to ask yourself, who would want to fake a phone call? There's nothing in it for the Trump campaign. For the president-elect's office. And it's most unlikely that the Washington Post put out such an article in detail based on nothing very much. So why are the Russians denying something that's happened? Either Putin was so embarrassed by the call, being told not to escalate, being warned of the US military presence, that he's trying to talk it out of existence. Or it's possible this is simply a Russian blunder. Perhaps Putin's office didn't tell their press office that the call took place. Maybe one day we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. And then coming back to the detail in the Washington report, in the Washington Post report, what do you think it says to us about how Donald Trump might approach this issue?
I think it tells us that Donald Trump is prepared to take a much tougher stand with Putin than a lot of people had expected. Referring to the US troop presence in Europe is clearly a veiled threat, even possibly of US intervention in the conflict. And a demand that Putin doesn't escalate, it speaks for itself. I don't think that this is at all what Putin would want to hear.
Now, we know that Donald Trump during the campaign made this commitment to end the war within a day, and people were very concerned about what that might mean, whether there would be big concessions made there to Vladimir Putin. Do you sense that there's a different strategy now emerging?
It's looking that way, isn't it? This is not the kind of things that you would expect someone to say who is planning to end the war in a day. The only way you could end this war in a day would be to hoist a white flag. And it doesn't sound like Donald Trump is planning that.
OK, but there were concerns that there could be some negotiations, that Ukraine would be forced to concede territory around Crimea and so forth, with even some Trump surrogates suggesting that that might happen.
Yes, although it's interesting that the president-elect's office has distanced itself from such comments, saying that those who made them no longer work for Trump. So they're putting clear blue water between them and that position. Mm. I mean, who knows how this war is going to end? It's quite possible it will end in some kind of negotiation, although the Ukrainian government has made very clear they are not prepared to cede territory.
I'm sure you were fascinated to see that when Donald Trump had his first conversation with Vladimir Zelensky, that Elon Musk was on that call too. What do you read into that?
That Elon Musk is going to be a very significant player in the second Trump presidency. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we could talk about for a very long time. But I think a lot of people will be quite concerned that someone has such power within the White House who is known to take such strong and sometimes, frankly, zany positions on world affairs.
Mm-hmm. See, nobody is clear on what role he will take. I mean, we have had Republicans on here with us saying he couldn't possibly be part of the cabinet or the administration in any formal way, given his business interests and by virtue of how busy he is. But clearly, if he's on the phone to world leaders with Donald Trump, he is, as you say, going to play a fairly significant role.
I think that's absolutely right, Claire. What role he might end up playing, we can only guess at. And it's quite possible that we don't know, because nobody knows, that Donald Trump, who's clearly got a close personal relationship with Elon Musk, hasn't yet made up his mind how exactly Elon Musk might fit into the White House team.
Let's talk a little bit about the United States then and China. I mean, that relationship is often spoken about as the world's most important bilateral relationship. So what do you think this new presidency now might mean for that relationship?
Trump has taken a public, very hard line on China, and particularly on the Chinese export surplus with the United States. Talk of 60% tariffs, which would bring large parts of the Chinese economy grinding to a halt. I think the big question is how the new White House will respond to the inheritance of the talks going on at the moment between the Biden White House and particularly the State Department and the Chinese. Remember that when Secretary Blinken went to China in June last year, he set up various working groups with the Chinese, which a US official recently let drop, were aimed at creating kind of overarching agreement with the Chinese, a grand bargain, if you like, including, crucially, North Korea, but also, very importantly for the Chinese, help with their economy, which clearly keeps the senior leadership in China awake at night. Every time we get news about the Chinese economy, it gets worse and worse and worse. And the Communist Party knows that this is an existential threat. If they do not deliver economic prosperity to the Chinese people, they should not assume they stay in power. I think, therefore, there's going to be a bit of a rush in negotiations with what's left of the Biden administration before Trump comes to power, possibly in an attempt to nail down a deal. And I think a lot of what Trump does with China will depend on what happens in those negotiations. If there's a deal, I think he might hesitate to unpick it, but they might not quite get there.
Why would he hesitate to unpick it?
Because I suspect he would want to take a tougher line with China than the Biden administration. He might think a deal is too soft.
Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to see how much is riding on this, because this is not just a blip with the Chinese economy, is it? They're in real dire trouble.
They are in dire trouble. They're in long-term trouble. Economists are saying that right now, as we speak, you could just about pull the situation back from the brink, but you would require very determined and politically very painful measures to do so. And it's been quite clear that Xi Jinping's administration has hesitated to take any such measures. They are desperate not to upset the Chinese people. They feel their position is precarious. Mm-hmm. And quite soon, we reach a point of no return where the economy, regardless of what the Chinese government does, will continue to slide. And then we enter seriously unknown territory.
So with the threat then of tariffs, I mean, Donald Trump really has them in a tight corner. Is there anything the Chinese can offer him to convince him not to levy these tariffs or not to levy them at such a high rate?
I think this is where the geopolitics comes in. I suspect that the outlines of the deal, which the Americans and the Chinese have not yet reached, would have in one part of the in one basket, if you like, help with the Chinese economy, which is what the Chinese desperately want. In the other, a Chinese commitment to stop supporting North Korea, forget the nine-dashed line, remember the seizure of large parts of the South China Sea, back off Taiwan. All these measures that the Americans have been demanding for a long time, they are probably trying to squeeze out of the Chinese as part of a wider deal.
Mm-hmm. Now, just on North Korea, we know the last time Donald Trump met Kim Jong-un three times, didn't he? And they developed something of a relationship. So can we expect to see that being picked up again?
Very unclear. We know from North Korean defectors that the North Korean game plan is that when the Ukraine war comes to an end, as eventually it will, and with it comes to an end, the supply of Russian grain, oil and money for North Korea, they will turn to a Trump administration and ask for American help. It's much less clear that Donald Trump would want anything to do with this. Remember that for him, it all ended quite badly. The February 2019 Hanoi summit was embarrassing. The whole thing fell apart. And yeah, the whole thing smells bad. If you are somebody like Donald Trump, if you've got something with a bad smell, you simply close it down. What is in it for Donald Trump to reopen dialogue with Kim Jong-un? I don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Just you mentioned there the relationship between North Korea and Russia, which is fascinating because they are sending troops, are they not, to Russia to help with the war effort. Has that been established?
Yes, it's pretty much established. Repeated Ukrainian claims that they've encountered North Korean troops on the battlefield, I think, are now grown too numerous to dismiss. Quite how much difference they are going to make is not yet clear. Ukrainian intercepts of Russian communication suggest that a lot of quite senior Russian generals just don't know what to do with these people. They think they might be simply more trouble than they're worth. Remember, too, that North Korea has not fought a war since the Korean War, since 1953. These troops are raw, unskilled in the modern battlefield. They can't speak Russian, obviously. They don't know how to handle modern weapons. They could be a bit of a headache.
Mm-hmm. So not properly equipped, not properly trained, perhaps, you know, if their performance, if they're a headache for the Russians, it's not going to do North Korea's reputation any good, is it?
No, it's not going to do North Korea's reputation any good internationally. It's not going to do Kim Jong-un's reputation any good domestically. He sent 10, 12,000, depending who you believe, of his special operations forces, so core forces from senior families in North Korea. And if the Russians use them as cannon fodder, simply walking towards Ukrainian positions so that they get shot, but the Russian troops behind them then know where the Ukrainians are hiding. Mm-hmm. That's not going to go down very well in Pyongyang. And Kim Jong-un's position domestically is not so solid that he can afford the kind of political hit from that.
John, it sends a message to South Korea as well, if that's happening, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But what kind of message? That North Korean troops are simply not all they're cracked up to be, or that North Korea is prepared to use troops actually on the battlefield? I think South Korea will be watching this very carefully, and I think we should take South Korean threats to arm the Ukrainians, particularly with the Hawk anti-missile system, very seriously. I think President Yoon might just do that.
Mm-hmm. So explain to me what the logic is in South Korea doing that for Ukraine.
South Korea has warned Russia not to help North Korea too far, not to transfer technology, and not to give North Korea battlefield experience. South Korea believes that one of its key advantages is that South Korean troops are battle-hardened. They learned a lot in the Vietnam War. They've been engaged in UN deployments. North Korean troops aren't. And the South Koreans have warned Russia that if Russia crosses that South Korean red line, then South Korea will cross its own red lines and give lethal aid to Ukraine. Missiles, anti-missile systems, as I've mentioned, possibly also South Korean troops to debrief whatever captives are taken by the Ukrainian forces. And you can bet your bottom dollar that if that happens, the South Koreans will put this stuff up on YouTube instantly and North Korea looks stupid.
John, it's a great pleasure to have you here. I know you're in Trinity later on today, so we wish you well with that. And great to have you here in Dublin.
Great to be here.
That's John Everard there, who was former British ambassador to North Korea and Belarus. Coming up, we're going to be finding out about a significant development in the investigation into the disappearance of Jojo Dullard. That's after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.